Hi, everyone, and welcome to the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Welcome to 2023. Good to have you here with us. Looking forward to a very exciting year of golf together. Sorry for recording the show a little bit late, doing it on a Tuesday morning. Typically, we do this on kind of a Monday morning, Monday afternoon type thing. My children's winter break schedule worked out in a way that they went back to school on a Tuesday, so had them at home yesterday and just wanted to enjoy the day with them, last day of break, to be honest with you. So we've got a lot to talk about, getting ready for the Century Tournament of Champions, and we'll get into that a little bit. And I imagine that a number of you, if not all of you, heard or watched or have some decent idea of what happened to Bills player DeMar Hamlin last night on the field during Monday Night Football. He went into some form of cardiac arrest as a result, potentially, of a play. It seemed at the time relatively innocuous, but became very clear very quickly that that was not the case. And the medical professionals, the emergency medical professionals that were there at the game, did the remarkable work of saving his life. They restored his heartbeat after he'd gone into cardiac arrest with a mixture of CPR and AED, and got him to a medical facility where he is intubated, it sounds like, based on reports, and that he is in a difficult situation, but they're running tests on him, and there does seem to be some element of hope that things will turn better. It was really hard to watch. I mean, it had to have been incredibly hard to watch if you were a Bills player or a Bengals player or a member of their staffs, that they formed kind of a human chain around the scene so that no one else could or had to see what was happening. It sounds, by all accounts, that there were several minutes, up to maybe 9 minutes of CPR and other life-saving techniques performed on Hamlin on the field before they got him into an ambulance and then ultimately transported him to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. It's incredible. And incredibly moving what the response has been from the general public to DeMar Hamlin's charitable efforts. He put something together when he was in college to try to help. He went to the University of Pittsburgh to try to help folks who were having a difficult time because of COVID, either, you know, around the holidays. And when that was created, his goal was to raise $2,500 for that effort. And because of people so moved by not only what happened on the field, but how seemingly universally beloved this guy is, just 24 years old, there's been more than $3 million raised for that effort as of this morning. And that's pretty incredible. I don't know what happens, obviously, from here. This is an NFL podcast, and I'm certainly not a guy to be talking about anything like that. But it definitely was a moment for me, and to obviously be frightened for his life, but also to kind of put in perspective what really matters. And it's hard to transition from. It's hard to kind of get rah-rah about golf because of that. But I'm going to try to get at least fairly excited about what we're going to start seeing on Thursday from Kapalua. We've got the Century Tournament of Champions. We opened the year right with the PGA Tour, with the Hawaii Swing. We've got this tournament, and then next week the Sony Open in Hawaii. This week with the Century Tournament of Champions, we have a different kind of tournament criteria than we've had for the history of this tournament. For the first time, at least maybe that's always been the case, but as far as I can remember, this has always been a winners-only tournament. You had to win either the Century Tournament of Champions or another tournament before it started, ran again, the 52 weeks, to qualify. And they have changed that criteria this year to include, and moving forward, to include players who qualify for the Tour Championship, or in the case of Shane Lowry, finish in the eligible top 30 in the final FedEx Cup standings. Because he qualified for this tournament because he would have been in the top 30 by taking out live defectors, basically. And so that would have gotten him into the tournament. He's ultimately not playing. The other guy not playing that's eligible is Rory McIlroy. You have in these elevated, this new construct of elevated events, you can skip one. And so Rory's skipping the first one, and he's going to play all the rest. And you can apparently also make some kind of arrangement with the PGA Tour to play another event in exchange for an elevated event. So you kind of can buy yourself a second skip if you go play another event. And that may explain, in part, not in full, just in part, why the American Express has so many great commits so far. The first event that's going to be played in the lower 48 back on the U.S. mainland after the Aloha Swing, that event is going to have a loaded field. And you would think with the tournament that has, I think the purse is $8.2 million. I mean, that's a pretty substantial increase for this tournament. It's typically lagged the other full field events in terms of purse. But for that many top players to commit to it, and you used to get, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 top 50 players, you're probably going to get a little bit more than that because it will just kind of be seen as a convenient way to buy yourself another tournament that you can go and skip elsewhere if you have to or if you feel that you have to. That all said, we've still got a really, really great field. I know McIlroy's not there, but you've got Rahm, you've got Scheffler, you've got Thomas, Cantlay. Will Zalatoris is back after the back issues from the BMW Championship that forced him to withdraw from that tournament, not play in the Tour Championship, skip the President's Cup. That was the bad news. The good news is Zalatoris got married. So he's got that kind of life-changing factor. It's sometimes called nappy factor. Rob Bolton, who does fantasy for the PGA Tour, kind of coined that term. But he used to kind of talk about it as it related to players becoming fathers. And that kind of being worn out by being a new dad or a dad again would lead to good performance, and that there's some kind of correlation to that. And that's, I think, has kind of since been expanded to, hey, if you got married, you may also kind of fall into that category because you worry about the planning for your wedding to at least some degree. You actually have to have the wedding. You go on your honeymoon. You kind of have the stress of one and then the relief of the other. And maybe that combination just kind of makes golf go to the back burner a little bit. And sometimes you play a little bit better when that happens. So there are a number of players in recent months who either got married or had children or had another child. So there's probably, what, 7 guys like that in the field, somewhere in that range. Max Homa became a dad, for example. Colin Morikawa got married. So did Zalatoris. Rahm became a dad again. That was earlier in the fall. So, I mean, you kind of have a number of players who are having life-changing events related to their family. So that there's some kind of expectation they might perform pretty well. But I don't think necessarily that having the change to the field materially affects the tournament. I know when they announced that there was kind of a mini uproar of, oh, you're changing this event, this winner's only event, as though it was something kind of sacred. And I'm not saying it's not important or not interesting because it was winner's only. I like that it's a small field. I like that it's not that many players, that we're welcoming people back to golf on a beautiful setting in Maui at Kapalua with not that many people. And it just kind of feels like a lower stress environment, in part because obviously the setting, Hawaii, is incredible. I'm sure I haven't been yet, so I'm going to go someday. But at the same time, I think it's also lower stress because there's just less to focus on. There's, you know, there can be a lot that happens even between 2 or 3 players in a round of golf, but it doesn't feel like you're darting around to capture it all. It feels like it just kind of moves at a more natural pace for a television viewer and probably for someone who's playing in it and probably for someone who is watching it in person. I love the primetime coverage of the tournament. It's exciting to watch golf at night as an East Coast person. We don't get a whole lot of that. I know folks who live on the West Coast really don't get a whole lot of that either. It's very rare for them to get anything in prime time because golf typically ends, one, on the East Coast, somewhere probably in the southeast portion of this country, and that typically ends between 6 and 7 o'clock. So if you're someone who watches golf on the West Coast live, you're done by the middle of the afternoon on Sunday, which, I mean, honestly, sounds pretty great. But that you get to watch golf in prime time because of the 5 hour difference between the East Coast and what, or is it 6 hours? What the time difference between the Eastern time zone and Hawaii? That it's 5 hours. That buys you a whole lot of nice viewing hours. And it's not because it's tape delayed. It's not because anything pejorative that makes the viewing experience less interesting. It's just because it's in a beautiful setting and you're looking outside and you know it's probably kind of colder, although it is kind of nice here this week in Maryland. But it's also pitch black. So it's a little bit of an inspiration, kind of a... Maybe it causes a little bit of FOMO, a little bit of jealousy, but it's going to be a good week. I obviously know that the defending champion is not playing. Well, he's not the defending champion. He's just the champion. Not defending the title, Cameron Smith. Set a tournament record last year, 34 under 258. The best total in PGA Tour history relative to par for a 72-hole tournament. And it was an incredible battle with Jon Rahm that turned out, I think it was kind of a slow burn at first. I didn't expect going into the final round that it was going to be like that. I thought, not that Rahm would run away with it, but that it wasn't going to be that close. And it turned out to be the complete opposite. Smith gave indications of what was going to be his career year, at least to date. And he drove the ball brilliantly. I know it's a wide open golf course, but there's still a lot of strategy involved in where you put the ball in the fairway, even if it's mostly short grass. Drove the ball great. Started hitting it longer. And I think that was probably a precursor of things to come too for Cam Smith. And it just turned into a lovely battle and really, really nice tournament to watch. And you got Cam Smith as your champion. So, obviously, he is exited to go to live and isn't coming back to the PGA Tour anytime soon. So, you're going to have Jon Rahm kind of as the favorite this week because he has a good track record at this venue. He does well in this tournament. It is kind of interesting that a number of players who have historically done well at this tournament have moved to live. I mean, obviously, the standout is Dustin Johnson. He's someone that would have been expected to do really well in this tournament had he been eligible. He would be, if not the favorite, among the favorites, given the way that he's played it in the past. And frankly, given the way that he's played on LIV, you would imagine some of that would have translated to the PGA Tour had he stuck around, not taking the money. But that's not the case. So you've got, behind him, you've got Xander Schauffele and Justin Thomas and Scottie Scheffler and Patrick Cantlay, and all of them but Scheffler have a good record in this tournament. So those are guys you probably want to turn to. Justin Thomas is going to have to hit the reset button a little bit. I mean, obviously, he won a major last year, and that was tremendous for him. Being a multi-time major winner is a whole lot different than being a one-time major winner. But the rest of the year was kind of gravy. And that tends to happen, frankly, to a lot of players. If you get a major championship win, and I don't think Justin Thomas feels he didn't deserve it. He played great golf and won the golf tournament. But in a way, he benefited from someone in front of him not sealing the deal. And I'm not saying that you would have expected Mito Pereira to do that. But because he didn't, it opened the door for him to become a major champion once again. And so I wonder if that mindset crept in like, hey, I got this one. The rest is frankly meaningless. And not to play poor golf. He didn't play poor golf, but to play like a guy who was playing with house money for the rest of the year. Well, that's not the case now. It's 2023. There is a ton of money up for grabs. I mean, let's just be true and see it with clear eyes. There's an incredible amount of money available to players on the PGA Tour this year. It starts this week. $15 million for a limited field 39-player event with $2.7 million the winner. 2.7. Last year, the winner of this tournament, Cam Smith, got $1.476 million. So, not quite double, but pretty darn close to double for what we're trying to talk about here. $8.2 million purse last year for this tournament is now $15 million. And the FedEx Cup points get bumped up, I guess, with these elevated events. So now there's 550 FedEx Cup points to the winner instead of 500. That was something I wasn't even aware of until, I think, this morning or last night. Not that that necessarily matters to us as golf fans, but it does matter to the players because it gives you a little bump, gives you a little bit of a head start in this final wraparound season. You also have to remember that once we get to August, whatever's coming, and we don't know what the future of the fall is, whatever that is, it doesn't count toward the FedEx Cup. So the exodus, the fleeing that we saw of golf fans, like to the tune of 30-35% lower ratings for the fall compared to last year, could kind of be more in line with, hey, this is what's going to happen in the fall come September. But obviously, that's a long way away. So you've got that, and you've got the money factor that I think is going to mean something to some of the players in this field. I mean, not everyone in this field is worth insane amounts of money, but all of them are obviously doing well. They had a good year last year, but your guarantee, I think it's $183,000 for dead last place this week. So just by making the trip to Hawaii to play golf, you're going to get paid nearly $200,000. That's not nothing. That's a lot of money. And I even after the state taxes and the federal taxes and paying your caddy and paying your coach and paying for whatever expenditures you took, maybe you brought your family, wife, and kids. Even after all that, you're still coming out way ahead and playing golf in Hawaii. So that on one hand, hey, you've got that baseline. But if, you know, Harris English won this tournament 2 years ago. No offense to Harris English, but he is not a top 20, top 15 kind of player historically. So the difference between winning a lower seven-figure sum and a nearly $3 million sum, it's probably going to mean something to guys kind of like that. To a Brian Harman, who had a great year last year, top 25 player in the world, that's going to mean something come Sunday. So if you have some players that are unexpectedly near the top of the leaderboard and they're vying for this title against the likes of Rahm and Thomas and Schauffele and Finau, I think that's going to mean something. That's going to come into play at some point. The back nine of Kapalua is really interesting on the plantation course because the front side is very demanding in terms of length. I mean, there are multiple 500-yard par fours. The par fives are fairly gettable. I mean, there's one that's 525 on the front, but the par fours on the front are very demanding, and that's in part because of the way the land rolls and the expected wind. But then you get to the back and you kind of start to play into the wind and you get these shorter par fours that have much narrower looking landing areas. And there's usually some stuff left and right that can mean serious trouble if you land like really high grass. If you go in it, odds are you're dropping one. You're taking a penalty. So it's a contrast of golf courses. The greens are huge. These are probably the biggest square footage greens on average on the PGA Tour. If they're not, I would be stunned. And in part, that's because it's a resort course, right? I mean, 360 days of the year, it's a resort course. And so you've got guests from around the world trying to play golf in Hawaii, have a good time. So that's what this was really designed for by Coren Crenshaw. But at the same time, you also have to have those large putting surfaces because of the wind. So you want to have an opportunity to hit greens for resort guests, but also you kind of want people to be able to hit the green, even though it's going to be pretty windy out there sometimes. And then you've got slower putting surfaces than you probably would expect almost anywhere else on the PGA Tour, save for maybe the Open Championship, where they run at about a 10. On the stint meter, it's going to be in the 11 range this week, which to you and me would be pretty quick. I mean, my golf club probably runs 12, 12 and a half when they do everything to trick it out. You know, most weeks it's probably 10. Right now it's probably a little slower than that, but you know, somewhere in that range. So 11 is, for a professional golfer, fairly slow, maybe a low moderate speed. And that's in part also because of the wind, right? You don't want a situation where resort guests or anybody who's out there is playing and the ball can't stay still when it's windy. So trying to keep that, that ball still on a large putting surface where there's plenty of exposed space and wind. Yeah, it's going to run a little bit slower. Helps that it's Bermuda. Bermuda is pretty sticky, obviously. Very grainy. Slows things down when you're putting into the grain. So this week, it's not a putting contest, but it is a putting contest in different ways. So obviously 34 under par won this thing last year, and I'm not necessarily expecting 258 or whatever it is to be the winning tally again. But you're probably looking in the mid-20s at a minimum to be the winning score. And if mid-20s is the winning score, then you obviously got to make a lot of birdies. Bogeys on this golf course are going to feel like doubles. Pars are going to feel like half shots lost. And if that is the case, then you've got to do two things really well. The first, obviously, is stick it close. You've got to hit it pretty close. You got to take advantage of the sub-400-yard par fours. You got to take advantage of the downwind, downhill par fours. You got to take advantage of the par fives as best you can. You got to score on those holes. And obviously, a lot of that relates to hitting your approach shot close to the hole, leaving yourself simple, easy putts. That's going to happen for the best players that perform this week. But you also need to be able to avoid three putts, because there are going to be times, especially on the longer par fours, where you're just not going to feel comfortable hitting to a target. I mean, they tuck some of these pins away. I think about the pins that are often on 17 on Sunday and Saturday. They're really difficult. And yeah, you may have to fire near them or at them if you are desperate for scoring. But if you're in a good position, you may want to kind of fire away from them. You may want to be a little bit more conservative. And if you do that, then you know that the possibility of three putting is higher because the greens are slower. You've got grain and the greens are huge. So playing away from the pin can mean a 70-foot first putt. And you've got to be able to lag putt really well, and you've got to be able to understand grain really well and slope really well and how those interact with Bermuda, and then avoid three putts. So hopefully we get some good golf. I expect a whole lot of it. And that's kind of the key to winning this tournament. What that then means for the rest of the year, well, I mean, typically a player who has won this tournament doesn't necessarily just jump off the page and have a great year. And I think there are a couple of reasons why. One, it's a limited field event, right? I mean, it's 39 players this year. The other thing I think that often happens is a player with winning experience wins this tournament. Obviously, we've had guys like Jeff Ogilvie who have dominated this tournament specifically to keep coming back to it over and over again. But what I mean is that there are a lot of the same winners every year. I mean, we don't have long streaks, right? You don't have Tiger Woods, Jack Nicklaus type streaks of where you win a tournament for 15 years in a row. But if you win a tournament for 3, 4, 5 years in a row, that's kind of common. For the players in this field, these players tend to come back because they're good. Now, there's plenty of turnover as well. Ryan Brehm, the guy who won in Puerto Rico with the ultimate heater of his life for 1 week, is very unlikely to come back here, probably ever, but certainly next year. And so you've got the players who have plenty of experience on this golf course, relatively speaking, competing against a bunch of players who are likely to come in and cycle out and not be part of the field next year. So you're kind of giving the experienced winners a big leg up. And that's why you tend to kind of get players of higher stature that win this tournament. And every once in a while you get different players or rising players who win the tournament. I mean, Cam Smith was a rising player last year. But you typically kind of get a player who has experience doing the job, being a winner. And so you kind of have to turn toward them. And if this is kind of a winners getting help, winners winning type situation, I don't think that really tells you a whole lot, to be honest, about the rest of the year. But it does kick off a really great stretch of golf where we've got the two Hawaii events, go to California, we get a couple of events in there, we're going to get two elevated events out of the West Coast swing. You still got Torrey, which is great. Still got Pebble, We'll see what happens with Pebble moving forward, but obviously I still love Pebble Beach. But it's kind of been, jammed a little bit. It's kind of been held up because you've got Genesis now, a $20 million tournament, and you've got Phoenix, which for this year will be an elevated event for $20 million. And the best players are going to compete in those. There's no way around that. There's just too much money on the table. So, and I'm sure like a couple guys will skip Phoenix just because it just doesn't speak to them. But no one's skipping Riviera. That doesn't happen. And so you're going to have a series of really, really great tournaments through the West Coast Swing. And then you're going to have another set of elevated events in the Florida Swing. You're going to have the API, which is worth $20 million. You're going to have the Players, which is worth, $25 million? You're going to have these tournaments that are huge, life-changing money, big fields, and then we get into the Masters. So we're starting to probably, there was an interesting debate about this, conversation about this on golf Twitter over the last couple of days about what's the best part of the PGA Tour schedule. And some people said, hey, it's this run from the start of the year to the Masters that really makes the year. And I can completely understand that. The golf tournaments are lovely. And it kind of drags a little bit in the summertime. Once you kind of get past May, I think you get into a part of the schedule where it's kind of more difficult to love the golf. I think through June is pretty strong. But then you do get into some tournaments kind of in there that are, no offense to the Rocket Mortgage or the 3M, they just don't have the pedigree of getting great fields of great players. So when you see the field list or you know that it's coming, you're kind of like, oh, man, is this going to be any good? Is this going to be worth watching? And usually, it is. It's not. But it's just different in the middle of the summer watching that compared to watching the intrigue of the West Coast Swing and the Florida Swing in February and March. That's just how I feel about it. But then you get into Open Championship season, which is one of my favorite times of the year. July has become a great month for golf for that reason, because you've got the Scottish Open now. You've got the Open Championship. Both of those things count toward the PGA Tour schedule, which is awesome. Love that. And then you get into the FedEx Cup playoffs. The FedEx Cup playoffs draw people. You may not like them, but they draw people in because they are, one, great fields, two, worth a lot of money. And I don't think the money thing necessarily gets people involved as much. But we've done this playoff thing. This will be the 16th, 17th year of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And that's not nothing, you know? That has built up over time some kind of pedigree. Does that mean it's a perfect system? No, we've been over that a zillion times. But there are enough people that are interested in it, in the outcome of it, maybe not the minutiae of it, but the outcome of it, that they watch. And Memphis in August is probably not the most inspiring place to play golf because it's really freaking hot in Memphis in August typically. But the BMW has been fun. I thought it was great last year in Delaware. Kudos to everyone in the Wilmington area and the Philadelphia area who made it special. And then you've got the Tour Championship, which I would love to see actually move around and move away from East Lake. But East Lake has some draw to it because of its history hosting this tournament, obviously, its history and the place of golf. But I tend to favor the early part of the year over the later part of the year in terms of excitement. And that's also probably personal in that I've had the last effectively 3 weeks off, 4 weeks off, because I still cover tournaments from the DP World Tour and other tours when the PGA Tour isn't running its schedule. But it's going to pick up from here, obviously. You've got this week really being the only game in town is the PGA Tour. I believe next week we pick back up with the Hero Cup on the DP World Tour. And then 2 weeks later, you get the first full field DP World Tour, and you get the resumption of the LPGA season. And then before you know it, we're going to have Champions Tour back and in that stretch of a couple weeks. And then the Korn Ferry Tour comes back. The Korn Ferry Tour is going to, I think, be even more interesting this year because you have 30 players who will now get their status from the Corn Ferry Tour to the PGA Tour. There's no more finals. There's no more mixing bowl of players, which I'm happy about. I like that the Corn Ferry Tour is its own thing, that it's its own season-long grind. There's no infiltration, no corruption of having to introduce PGA Tour players who are also simultaneously, but also not simultaneously, trying to get a card back. I like that they've done that. It's going to be great that you can, more players can earn a living playing the Corn Ferry Tour. Not saying a good living, but that they can at least be profitable at the end of the year, because all of the purses have increased to $1 million on the Corn Ferry Tour. And the finals events, which are, they're now back to four, will be $1.5 million. So again, you're going to make $180,000 every week on the Corn Ferry Tour if you win. That's reasonable money. That's not a bad paycheck for a week. And making the cut, you're going to get somewhere in the area of, $4,000 or $5,000. You're going to come out ahead if you make the cut. So I'm excited about the Corn Ferry Tour season. And then I guess we'll see what happens with LIV. It's supposed to start in February. I have no idea where it's at. They have not introduced a full schedule, as far as I've seen, and they haven't indicated at all whether they're going to sign any new players. There's no indication they have a TV deal. I haven't really heard anything about that front, which has frankly been kind of nice, but there's been no news, and I don't know what that means. Does no news mean there's an accumulation of it coming? Does it mean there really just isn't anything going on? Does it mean there's, you know, Greg Norman's going to be out and they're just going to announce a whole ton of crap at once? I don't know. But at least among the five pre-existing major tours that run around the world, we've got some pretty significant stuff that's about to ramp up in the next couple of weeks. And I'm very excited about it. I said this on Twitter. I kind of fell out of love with golf last year. And I think that was in large part because of all of the bickering and all of the needling. Obviously, the Saudi influence does not make me happy. I've made that pretty clear. But all of this talk about will they, won't they, who's going to leave, who's going to run to the money, how much are they going to get, who's going to leave the PGA Tour next. There's a lot of selfishness to go around in the world. There's a lot of selfishness to go around in golf in the last year. But all of that stuff took away, in some fashion, not entirely at all, but in some fashion, from what turned out to be a hell of a year. I mean, you had Scottie Scheffler rise up from not winning a tournament to winning four times in, what, 8 weeks, eight starts, and becoming the number one player in the world and the Masters champion. And then you had Justin Thomas become a multi-time major champion after the week-starting disappointment of not having the defending champion there, Phil Mickelson, because of his actions and what he chose to do related to LIV. And you had a great U.S. Open. Great U.S. Open between Zalatoris, and you had Rahman there for a while, and Fitzpatrick, and McIlroy. I mean, what a great, great U.S. Open at the Country Club. And then you still got it one up by the Open at the Old Course. I mean, one of the great final nines in the history of major championship golf for Cam Smith to win the Claret Jug. And then even still, he kind of besmirches that by making it by all the accounts of, hey, he's going to live, and then being asked about it and then being coy about it. So you knew what the truth was at that point. And that was unfortunate. So let's hope, I guess, that there's some, I don't call it stability, because things are going to change. Things always change. Stasis, maybe, is a little bit more accurate of a term. To try to, just some sense of normalcy, I guess. And I guess we'll see what the year brings. I'd have no illusions that something weird isn't going to happen. Like, that's just the way that it is. Something weird is going to happen. And that's golf. That's kind of the world in which we live. But here's hoping that some things get resolved. I don't want them really resolved in Liv's favor, but that things get resolved. And whether that means, I don't even know what that could mean. And I've tried to game that out in my head different times. You know, when I have a few quiet minutes maybe, or just think about golf for a few minutes. And admittedly, I haven't thought about it deeply much the last month and a half. But when I think about it or have thought about it, I've kind of wondered what the end game is, what the exit path is, where things go from here, and whether in 3, 4, 5 years, we're still acknowledging that LIV Golf exists, or frankly, that it's gone away. And then how do you evaluate it? One, its impact, and two, putting everything back together as best that golf can. That if LIV goes away, that's got to happen. And I don't know what that looks like, but that's a whole other set of questions, maybe for another time. In the meanwhile, I'm very excited about at least what we're going to see inside the ropes this year. I want to be excited about golf again. And that's one of my big goals. In terms of goals for content this year, I kind of wanted to save this more for the back end, the very back end of the show. My goals for this year are to get GNN Radio off the ground and running. I mean, the response has been very good so far in the soft launch, and I'm excited to see what it looks like now that we'll have full schedule of golf that people care about to talk about while we run the station. We've got over 20 shows on the station, which is incredible already. And I hope you'll listen to a lot of them. We've got more we're adding each and every day, which has me excited. And we'll continue to update that listing at golfnewsnet.com. Want to build up the website a little bit more. This is a little bit inside baseball, but over the last couple of years, I mean, this has happened forever. My content, the ideas that I produce for GNN get copied a lot. And they get copied by the bigger publications. And then you kind of have to adjust. And that's competition. That's how it works. And it can be frustrating, but that's competition. But now there are more competitors who copy my stuff, copy my ideas, and frankly, they're bigger. It's harder to keep up with them. And there are content farm sites based out of the Indian subcontinent that write content in English, and it's a very smart business plan. But they produce unfathomable amounts of content about every sport, every day. And they generate probably a ton of traffic. It's really difficult to keep up. And so on one hand, I want to build up the website a little bit more. But at the same time, I also want to produce more content that I care about, and not just to inform, but that I'm passionate about. So there'll be more of that on the website this year. I want to expand what we do with the GNN membership. It kind of goes hand in hand with content that I care about, and kind of connecting with people that care about golf and maybe the same way that I do. So we'll do that. The membership is $30 a year now. I'm going to increase it to $50 this year. It had been $50 for a few years. I lowered it because in the COVID era, I just thought it kind of made sense to lower it and didn't bring it back to what it was. If you follow me on social media, I have gotten into sewing, of all things. And not sewing because I want to do hemming, but sewing because I'm interested in making head covers and top kits and shoe bags and valuables pouches and stuff like that around golf. So I've been working to learn how to make these types of things with different designs and materials, and trying to put them together in a way that seems interesting to me and unique to what's being done in golf right now. So I've been working on that a little bit the last couple of weeks. And once I get all of my designs down, I'm going to start making really small batch stuff that'll be available on our website on golfnewsnet.com. I have a shop that's called Golf Scouts that actually we make patches around golf. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to change the name of Golf Scouts because I've noticed that we get like high school kids who follow the Golf Scouts account because they're thinking we're golf scouts for like college, not the intended idea of golf scouts, like exploring golf, like Boy Scouts or Cub Scouts or Girl Scouts would. So kind of didn't see that. So we'll probably have to change that, but we'll still do the patches. We'll add in the head covers and shoe bags and those types of things and do small batch runs of that. And then if you become a GNM member, I'm pretty much just going to give you a credit worth that amount of money to the shop. And you'll be able to get a head cover or a dop kit or that kind of thing if you're interested in it. So we'll give you basically your money back in the store. So if you're interested in that's an easy way to get your money back for the GNM membership. And that'll be coming in the next couple of weeks once I introduce that. And then we're going to keep doing more video stuff. We've got some cool things in the works in terms of distribution for our videos. So there will be more kind of small daily update videos that you'll probably see on different websites. And that'll be key for us. But more than anything else, I want in everything that I do, including the radio, including the videos, all the stuff that I write, newsletters, which I've really enjoyed doing. I'm going to include a weekly member newsletter on Wednesdays. I think it's going to be Wednesdays. I haven't exactly decided the date yet, but I think it's going to be Wednesdays. And that'll be just for the members. And it'll just kind of be a deep dive on a topic. And I'll publish it on the website too for members if you don't want the newsletter. But there'll be kind of a deep dive topic each week. And through all of that, I want all of it to come through how much I love this game and how fortunate I feel to have this opportunity to be able to talk to you about golf, talk with you about golf, both at a personal and professional level. And I kind of want to explore a little bit this year about communicating about how I think the game can be a little bit simpler at the recreational level. Not, you know, no snobbery or anything, more in terms of technique and how we approach the game, how we approach scoring and accomplishment, and that the game doesn't necessarily have to be as hard as it's often made. There's a lot of really good, interesting content out there about golf instruction and the technical side of things and the mental side of things. And I think oftentimes it's made very complicated because golf's really hard. Golf's really hard to be good at. It's really hard to understand, not only from in the abstract, just trying to think about it, but also when you're in it, it's really hard to be good. And I think part of why so much instructional content, both mental side and physical side, is so complicated and varied is because no one has the answer. And I'm not claiming to be, but I think that the most important thing that you can do in golf is simplify the game. Make decisions easy. Make your approach easier, repeatable, reliable. Because when you do those things, you take out some of the bad decisions. You take out some of the choices that we make that, frankly, make our score worse. Trying to hit a hero shot. Trying to go for a pin you shouldn't go for. All kinds of different. Not hitting the green when you can with a chip shot. All of those types of things are stuff I see a lot of my friends that I play with struggle with those decisions and try to kind of stay back from it. You know, I don't like to really give instruction or anything. I don't like to butt in like that when I'm playing with my friends or definitely with strangers. But if I can kind of make content that explains what that should look like to make your scoring easier and better. And I don't think it has to be a whole lot of it. I don't think it needs to be a constant barrage of, this is what you're doing wrong, here's how to fix it. Like, hey, let's take some ideas and really boil them down to how you can use them across the board. And I do want to do that a little bit this year. So that'll be once we get into probably the more operable part of golf for the year in the DMV, in the Mid-Atlantic region. I'm going to play golf today. I've played golf in a month and a half. No idea what talent I have anymore. We'll see how good or bad it is. But I'm really excited about it. I'm excited to get back to golf. I'm gonna joined a club called Old Barnwell last year. That it's opening in Aiken, South Carolina. I'm looking forward to getting down there and playing the seven holes that they have open sometime in the winter, hopefully in January, we'll see. And then when the course opens in full in the fall, I'm definitely going to go down there a couple of times and play. And then Sunny Hannah Country Club, where I have a national membership, is by far the best deal in golf. If you're truly interested in it, talk to me. It's truly the best deal in golf. And they've done a renovation of bunkers and green complexes and all kinds of stuff at that Tillinghast design. And most of it's done. Yeah, they did a lot of it through the fall. I don't think it's all done, but most of it's done. So I can't wait to get up there and see what they've done and try it out for myself. So I've got a lot to check out in the world of golf this year. Hopefully ending in the fall by going to the Solheim Cup and Ryder Cup in back-to-back weeks in Spain and Italy. I've had this one circled for a while, so I'm really excited about that. I've never been to continental Europe. I'd love to go, so I'm planning that out, and hopefully we'll get that together as well. So lots to look forward to in the year. I would love to hear from you what you want to hear on the show. If you want to hear from particular guests, I'm happy to try to get them. If you want to hear certain topics, or you don't want to hear certain topics, when you want to stray away from certain things, happy to do that too. At least have that conversation. You can email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Also, we have the daily weekday podcast, Two Off the First, which is much more focused on the headline driving things in golf each day. That's available through your favorite podcasting service and on GNN Radio. And then also my weekday, Monday through Wednesday, golf betting podcast, which is called The Press. Same thing, 15 to 20 minutes, just like Two Off the First is about 20 minutes. Get into some things around golf betting each day. So we'll keep the golf betting stuff over there on that podcast if you're interested in that. Fantasy type stuff, that's called The Press. Again, available on your favorite podcasting service and on golfnewsnet.com. All right, that's going to do it for us on the show. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. We will talk to you next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show.